Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's On the Fly Filmmaking.
Hey everybody, welcome back to On the Fly Filmmaking, a part of Popcorn Talk University. I'm your host, Mary Lou Mandel, and today we're talking with some fun new filmmakers. This is the show where you are going to learn some behind-the-scenes tips, tricks, and different ways to get the shot if you are or are an aspiring indie filmmaker. Today I've got with me Hazmeen Harvey and Edmund Lozano. You told me so many times, Lozano. They are fabulous pair of filmmakers that recently won the Shortlands 48-Hour Film Festival. So let everybody know where they can find you on social media, and then we'll get to know you.
I have a Facebook account. Hi, everybody. I'm Edmund Lozano. I have a Facebook account under my name, Edmund Lozano, and then I recently got a Instagram. It's under Ed_Lozano.
Welcome to 2016.
Yes, I know.
I also have a Facebook account. but you can find me at Hazmeener on Instagram. Mm-hmm. It's Jazmeener.
Right on. And I'm Mary Lou Mandel. Again, you can find me on all social media at Mary Lou Mandel, MarieLouMandl. I know it's weird. I have to spell it out because people get confused. Awesome. So, Hazmeen, tell me about your place in filmmaking, what you're trying to do here in the world of making movies.
Well, right now I'm trying to get more experience as a cinematographer. Mm-hmm. I love lighting. I love framing the shot. I love cam op-ing. I've done a lot of second AC work, DIT work, which is more of like a loading position. And in doing our own projects, I've been trying to get more experience on like the cinematography side.
Mm-hmm. Right on. So that is like a lesson for a lot of indie people or anybody who wants to get into filmmaking. Like, you will try a lot of different jobs until you find your spot.
Yeah.
And you should try. I really think you should try as many different positions as possible.
Yeah, because you might.
In a lot of different ways.
Yeah, and you might find one position that, like, you didn't expect to like as much and then realize, like, oh, crap, I'm an editor.
Yeah.
Or something like that, you know? So you won't know until you try it.
And it makes you more versed on set so that you, if you want to direct or if you want to be one of the other positions, you know what the other people on set are going through. Mm-hmm. And that always helps.
Right. And I think that's very important to the team culture that filmmaking is.
Absolutely.
You know, if like you understand what this other position is, then if you're shooting something and you know it's going to a different editor, you're like, let me keep it a little bit more organized. Mm-hmm. Oh, we're almost there. Okay, cool. So you guys have known each other now for like a year or two.
We've been friends for 2 years now.
Close to 2 years.
Okay.
We met in college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the university. New Mexico State University.
Right on. New Mexico representing here. Okay, yeah. So tell me about how you guys started working together as collaborators.
Well, I'm from El Paso, Texas, by the way, and I went to New Mexico State University to get my bachelor's degree. And we met, we had a class together, and we talked a little bit, but it wasn't until the final year of school that we decided to work together. I had sent her a script of something that I really wanted to shoot, and so we started back and forthing. She was on the other side of the world at that point, and we were back and forthing ideas, and then that's not the first thing we worked on. She ended up wanting to do a 48-hour film festival, which I did sound for. Sound was my first love, and
yeah, but
I still
really stepped in because so in like pre-production for this 48-hour, I was actually doing it with my friend Dan Delaney. And so he was writing it, and we were going to, like, co-direct it together. And then Edmund did sound, and then we did locations together. But I think what really kind of solidified our friendship is that he came over at, like, 2 a.m. to my house to help me edit while we're doing this whole 48-hour thing. Like, you know, we've all been up for, you know, what, 36 hours at this point, and we're still trying to edit and make the final product. And Edmund drove all the way from El Paso, which here in L.A., it's, like, 40-minute drive. That's an average drive. But in New Mexico and El Paso,
it's about an hour
driving 45 minutes is like a big deal.
Some dedication to the craft. That's amazing. But like, am I wrong? Like, do you guys find this true as well? That like, I find my best editing happens at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Well, 2 a.m. And it also happens when there's, you know, you'll learn that a deadline also helps.
Uh-huh.
And
deadline
so
makes
you really
all
start
the difference.
To, it gets into crunch time and that helps out. Otherwise, sometimes you end up sitting on stuff that you want to get done.
Yeah. And then after that experience of working together, I was working on my senior thesis at that point, and then I spent the next like 3 months trying to convince Edmund to be my producer.
She did. Little by little, she got me in more and more. Because at the time I was also working on a documentary For another course that I took over there, and she, little by little, can you help me with this paperwork? And then, can you help me with this? And then can, and I was like, you
and
know
then
what?
I was like, scream my producer.
So yeah, we ended up, I ended up producing Overland, which is in the final stages of editing right now.
Very cool. And the film that we're going to be addressing today is Lotus, which is actually a result of a recent 48-hour mm-hmm. film festival. Tell me about that one.
Well, we, Hasmin heard about the 48-hour film festival through a friend, mm-hmm. Tasha, who's a co-producer and actor.
And this
actually,
is the short lens.
I actually heard it from Cassandra.
Oh, that's right.
So she was my old roommate mm-hmm. when I lived in Valley Village. Mm-hmm. And her and her boyfriend have put together this like Shortlands film competition, and she tagged me in it. She was like, "You need to do this," and that's kind of like how I heard about it.
Cool. All right. So before we show the trailer for Lotus, I want to talk a little bit about, for somebody who might not know what a 48-hour film festival is. Mm-hmm. It's a competition that the whole production of the film takes place within 48 hours, and there's usually some creative props, like mm-hmm. you have to have a certain prop, or you have to have a certain line or a genre.
Correct.
So in the 48-hour film festivals that you guys have done, what are some of the parameters they've given you?
I've gotten location as a parameter, usually a line of dialogue, a prop. Sometimes they'll give you genre. I did one where we had to pull the genre out of a hat.
Mm-hmm. Theme, which was something that we ran into with this one.
Mm-hmm. Or sometimes like a certain shot, like you have to have like a Dutch angle at some point mm-hmm. in the story.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Yeah, it's really, like, really fun.
Fun variety of stuff, and it really helps you kind of set a framework mm-hmm. for whatever story you're going to write. Like if you need writing prompts, mm-hmm. 48-hour film festival is like a great way to do that, because you know that you have to take what they gave you and just run with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what I like about it is the weekend project idea, right? Mm-hmm. So like if you're somebody who likes to take on projects like I do, if I wasn't making films or shooting things, like, I'm going to build a shed. I'm going to like change all the tires on the car. Like it's this weekend project kind of vibe of mm-hmm. like beginning to end, like by the time we get to Sunday night, it's done.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it's a great kick in the butt and a kick in the rear to make something, and you know you have a deadline in 2 nights, so it's nice.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So let's look at the trailer for their short film, Lotus.
Thank you.
Very nice. And there cool. it is. That's the trailer for Lotus. There will be a link in the description to the full short film if you guys would like to see it. It's very wonderful.
Thank you.
And
thank
I think
you.
It's super impressive, especially like on its own, it's impressive. And then when you know that it was 48 hours yeah. from conception to birth. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Like, it's really satisfying.
It is.
To
it
give
is.
Birth to this.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Very, totally. It just
feels
like a birth.
Baby.
Pop that right out.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, first up with this, I want to mention, like, the music was really awesome.
Yeah.
Like, really, really impressive. And that, actually, before I want to get into, what were the prompts for this?
The prompts for this were...
Things aren't always as they seem.
Yeah, that was our theme.
Was, like, the theme. Things aren't always as they seem. Props, we
couple
had...
noodle.
Cup of Noodle and the Wilhelm Scream,
mm-hmm.
uh-huh.
which is the...
You hear it in Star Wars. You hear it all over the place. They're always finding a way
effect.
To plug it into a movie, a sound effect.
Okay.
So if you don't know about that and you're interested in film, just like look it up.
Look it
it's
up.
In every movie.
There's a really cool supercut they have, actually, of it.
Oh, wow.
It's like an ongoing joke in
yeah.
the film industry.
I'll have to look that up because I wasn't familiar with that.
Yeah, it's really funny. Like, and when you start noticing it and like hearing it in action movies, it's just like
yeah, they
so
try
weird.
To plug it in everywhere. It's
oh,
really
my
cool.
Gosh. Oh, yeah. Well, there you guys go. You have some inside jokes into the film. Industry now. Now
scream.
You're part of the family.
And then the line of dialogue was, "We're running out of time."
Mm-hmm.
We're running out of time.
Yeah.
Cup
that,
of noodles.
Yeah, and that was the.
And things aren't what they seem.
Mm-hmm.
Really
genre
fantastic.
Was open.
Genre was open.
Which
so
is
like,
cool because sometimes, usually, you might get a genre, and mm-hmm. that. So if you had it had in your mind that you wanted to do a comedy, but then you get like horror.
Yeah.
Which is fine. You could do like a comedy horror mix.
Okay. Yeah, you could make something work, but it's
yeah.
kind of good to go in without. too much mm-hmm. preconceived notions.
Yeah. Definitely.
Awesome. Okay, so when you're planning for a 48-hour film festival...
Or should we get to the music?
No, we'll go back over there. When you're doing a 48-hour film festival, you want to prepare before mm-hmm. you even get the prompts, mm-hmm. right? So what are some things that you do before the 48-hour start that you can do?
Crew. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, getting your crew ready, having your sound, and if you can, as really as many hands that want to help you, because obviously it's not going to be a big budget that you're working with, so you want to bring on people that are willing to help and that can be versatile on set. We had Hannah, who was awesome because she'd help go get food, but then she'd also help with a slate, you know, first day seeing.
Yeah, and definitely getting like an everything PA, like somebody mm-hmm. who can be who's able to leave set and come back. Mm-hmm. But getting crew together, getting actors who deciding what day you're gonna shoot. I mean, obviously it should be the second day.
Hopefully you're shooting the next day.
Yeah. getting kind of like a call time set. Mm-hmm. So that helped us a lot of just like having a variety of locations that we could shoot at mm-hmm. and then sending out a call sheet at around 10 p.m. and having a 9 a.m. call time. So mm-hmm. even though we hadn't finished the script yet, we wanted to make sure that our crew knew what was going on as far as like their end, that yeah. they knew where they were showing up at 9 a.m. the next day. Mm-hmm. And then we could just deal with the fact that we're not going to sleep at all because we're writing the script.
That's actually really helpful in getting and being able to push out a cleaner product if you have a set time and then a set location, even though you might not have the script quite yet, obviously, if you haven't received all the parameters. Mm-hmm. Having those two things are really key in getting out a cleaner product because mm-hmm. everyone knows to meet, and at least for sure you have everyone there at the right time.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. does a 48 hours start when you get the information, right?
Yeah.
Correct.
So there's typically like a party or like some kind of like social gathering at yeah. like 7 p.m., on a Thursday, yeah. right?
So this one was cool because they actually sent the prompt out online. Mm-hmm. So we were able to just meet at our producer's house.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, and they released the prompt at 5 p.m. Mm-hmm. And from then we had, you know, 48 hours from that point mm-hmm. to turn in the final movie. Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic yeah. because, like, the last ones that I've done, like, three different 48-hour film festivals. You had to go to this gathering. Uh-huh. And then I'm like, well, we're wasting an hour driving from there. Echo Park. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, then we had crew that wanted to stay and, like, have a drink because it's usually at a bar. And I was like, listen, guys, like, we gotta make a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, with this one, so we were at our producer's house at 5 p.m. And then we kind of told ourselves, like, okay, we'll stay here until 6 and we'll brainstorm. We ended up staying until 7 brainstorming. Didn't come up with anything we really wanted to do. And then we went back to our house and then brainstormed more. And didn't really come up with something solid until about 2 a.m. Because mm-hmm. we had talked about this story at, like, I remember, like, looking at the clock and it was, like, 9:30 because I was like, we gotta get those call sheets out, you know? Then we didn't settle on it until, like, 2 a.m.
Yeah, yeah. I remember at that point feeling like, well, it's 9:30. We're still okay. But those hours start melting away midnight, 1, and we're like, okay, let's yeah. get the script.
Great. Okay, so then now I want to ask about the music because it feels so special to mm-hmm. this movie. Did you have that before or after you had your script?
So all that is Hope Riot, who's mm-hmm. an amazing musician in El Paso. If you can look her up, Hope Riot, she has an album on iTunes. She's on Spotify. She's on SoundCloud. But I asked her before this started if we could use her music mm-hmm. for whatever we're doing. And it's like, we don't know if it'll fit what we're making, mm-hmm. but it's nice to basically have just a bank of resources.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I asked her if we could use her music, and she said that we could use anything we wanted.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and she's doing the music for my senior thesis, Overland.
Cool. So then before you even get your, you know, assignment, you've got a crew set up, mm-hmm. you've got potential locations, and you know we're starting tomorrow at 9.
Yep.
But we'll get you the information as soon as possible.
Yeah, and also making sure that everybody knows that it's a 48-hour and yes. that they have to be flexible.
Yeah.
And that they might get their call sheet at midnight, although I really didn't mm-hmm. want to do that because that was stressing me out.
Right.
Is the idea of, like, other people not knowing when we're starting.
Yeah. Now, this is really interesting. The people that you worked with, not many of them you've worked with before.
Never.
So how did you find
Never
these people?
Never before.
Facebook.
That'd be Facebook. And she mentioned Tasha, who is our producer on the movie. She was fantastic. So she really put us in connection with her connections, which were the actors. Mm-hmm. Her house is the location for the movie. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. she was instrumental. Hair and makeup. She put us in contact with all of these people. She helped us with a call. She was very good.
And we only had a crew. It was only 8 people. So it was only 4 crew members, myself, Edmund, Hannah Resinger, and Josh Schwartz. Mm-hmm. Hannah is a friend of ours, and Josh is a friend of Tasha's. And then we had our 3 actors, Tasha, Avi, and Katie, and then hair and makeup. So it was only 8 of us.
There's 8 of us.
Yeah, that's really great, especially some of the stuff you're doing in kind of small spaces. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you don't want to have too many people, which is great.
And the way I met Tasha, so this is the first project that like Edmund and I ever did in LA that was our own. And it was really just social media that helped me find Tasha, because mm-hmm. we are both part of the Women in the Industry page mm-hmm. on Facebook. And she'd contacted me about helping her with the 48-hour film fest. And that one didn't work out. Mm-hmm. So when this came around, I asked Tasha if she still wanted to collaborate. And that's kind of like how all of this came about. It was just sending out messages over Facebook mm-hmm. of just like, hey, like, you want to make something? Like,
yeah, no, the power of social media is really great. And the lesson of that, like, the moral of that story is, no matter where you are, if you want to make mm-hmm. a project, you can find people who want to work with you.
Yeah.
And these 48-hour film festivals are in most cities.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're all over the country. Yeah. So, like, you don't have to be in L.A. to be making movies.
And what's great is that it's not, like, a huge commitment for people. So, like, mm-hmm. if it's one day of shooting, people can take that time off. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I think Josh, it was his day off mm-hmm. and he just wanted to have fun and play out. And like make a little movie.
Josh did sound. Yeah, he came in and helped us out. It was really nice.
So if you're worried about not having a budget to like pay people, if it's only one day and everybody's understanding of the fact that it's a 48-hour film fest, mm-hmm. like you can totally do it.
That's great. Okay, cool. So with you guys wrote the story, you figured out what it was going to be. Give us a little synopsis of that, of your story.
All right, well, the story, just kind of to go into how it came about, we had wanted to start a story off with images. We had this thought of really nice images coming out at the beginning of any story that we wanted to do. And after being in Tasha's house, we thought, wow, you know, what about, we thought of this shot of a nice bed and then little trinkets in her house, books. And somehow and this thing stuck of a powder, a little container of powder in the restroom. And then, oh, wait, what if it's a guy that's getting ready in the restroom? Oh, what if he's, you know, he's putting on his dress and he's getting ready? And from there, we went down the path and started coming up with mm-hmm. with the little scenarios.
The conflict,
like,
right?
Yeah, the conflict and everything. I'd say, what about this? And then Hasbeen would be, wait, but then this. And then so we started jiving with it, mm-hmm. which was tough. And something that we talked about with coming up with stories is that it feels like you're opening all these doors up, but you don't want to go too far, because if that doesn't work, we've wasted 30 minutes or 40 minutes in developing something that we didn't like.
Budgeting time
for
story development.
Yeah, it was crazy. And so... Yeah. So once this was fully developed, we're like, all right, we'll go away from this for a little bit. Let's see if we like something else. And then...
And then we wanted to make something that had, like, a positive message.
Yeah, that had a good message and that was emotionally...
A little social commentary, mm-hmm. a little, you know, it's, like, relevant now. So I think it was really cool story.
Thank you.
The link is available for you guys to watch the full film. So while you guys are shooting, so now we're like executing. You've decided on the story. You've put out your call sheet. Now we're on shoot day. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about some of the issues that you ran into, especially like we're in a time crunch. Maybe we don't have everything that's available. Mm-hmm. Then so one of the photos that we have is... You guys are in the bathroom. We have like see Edmund like chilling in the corner of the bathroom. What's happening here?
So you want to go first?
Yeah. Well, what we're doing here, very close quarters, and
four people in the bathroom.
Four people. We had the sound guy in the bathtub. We had
Hasbeen
shooting. with Avi, and me on the floor. You know, getting a good look at what the shot was going to look like and everything. And we had to not have everyone in there, which everyone was kind of like, they weren't going to know what the bathroom scene was going to look like.
Yeah.
But this, in my head, I was the most excited to shoot this scene.
And so what kind of sucked about that is that we were really excited for this scene, but we only had 1 hour to shoot the whole thing because Avi had to go to work.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
You had other time parameters too.
Oh, yeah.
Avi had to go to work, and then
and that's something that we weren't aware
of. Scheduling.
We weren't aware of schedules until the day of.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have an AD. Like, I was ADing it as we went.
Yeah.
And then location-wise, you had issues with, like, a Airbnb?
Yeah, so Tasha rents out one of the rooms in her house as an Airbnb house or guest room.
Mm-hmm.
And she had two honeymooners that were going to show up at, like, 6:30. So we had to be out of the back of the house by 6:30,
mm-hmm.
Which we kind of ran into stuff later because of that, but nothing big. Like, it wasn't like a huge deal that we had to get out of the back of the house.
And that's definitely an indie filmmaking thing, is that you're going to be dealing with, if you're, you know, you're in a location where, you know, hey, we have to hurry because my roommate's going to be here and he'll be in his room.
I just like the idea of these like honeymooners showing up to the house and there's like all these like film people with just like a boom pole and like cameras.
Am I on a prank show?
Yeah.
So specifically that situation with the people coming into the room for like the Airbnb rentals, there's a photo that we have of one of the actresses up close and the background is kind of dark. And that one there, I think that's where you had told me the scenario came up because you guys had to clear the room out so you couldn't light it the same way.
Yeah, and so that was something that I definitely like learned from this experience, was that I should have just lit it anyway. Like, it's not a, it doesn't, I don't know if anybody even noticed except for me, but that back
hallway,
there should have been a light in that back if we were going to be consistent with like the lighting throughout the entire short. And when we were shooting this, it was the end of the day and we had all like taken, you know, 10 minutes to help Tasha clear out the back of the house. And that included taking out the lighting setup that we had back there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that hallway isn't lit the same way.
And that's, we had talked about stuff like this before because we love watching movies and understanding, you
know,
what they did.
But I don't know if
anybody noticed it. Yeah, it's just something that slipped by because lighting continuity is also plays a part just like any other kind of continuity in the movie. Real quick, if you guys watch the movie, going back to the bathroom thing, the shot of the overhead shot of Avi, if he was to move to the left or right at any point, he would have seen me in the corner right there.
Yeah, so we were like framing out a lot of stuff. Like, I don't know, there's a lot of audio of me telling Edmund, like, could you just move your foot like 1 inch?
No, that's really great. And to know that, like, the actor who is in the bathroom, like, I thought his performance was so good.
Absolutely.
And so real. And to know you guys are like inches away.
Oh, yeah.
Like just all up in his face as he's putting lipstick on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Avi Bernard, fantastic.
One of the overhead shots, because we didn't have the slate inside with us for a while. I don't know why. But later I grabbed it and he started doing the slate.
Yeah,
it started getting kind of chaotic. But so we would slate it once and then we would just roll for like 10 or 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, like, I jumped onto the edge of the bathtub.
Yeah.
And it was like really slippery, and like the sound guy was like holing my back, and he was like, I got you, and I'm like, and I can't even see what the frame is really because it's the 6D, so it doesn't have like a flip out screen or anything. So I'm just like guessing that it's right, and it, you know, it came out good.
Yeah, which is one of the benefits I feel for some of the older like DSLRs that have the flip out screen.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can use that,
And you can flip them all over the place and angle it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that but I know tough. Also, like, if you don't have that, you can usually find, you have a cable, you can plug it into your phone or, like, an iPad to be a viewfinder
I mean, I think the 6D has an HDMI out.
It does, and it also has Wi-Fi, but not for video. Yeah, it has Wi-Fi, not for video.
So that would be something to invest in, like, a small little Lilliput monitor or something like that.
Take note of that. Find it on Craigslist.
And so we shot it just on a 6D, and we had a 24 to 70 lens.
And a 50, which we didn't really
use
the 50
too much.
We didn't
use it because I had the 24 to the 70, so we didn't really need the 50.
Yeah.
And I would say 24 to 70 lens is my favorite.
Yeah, great lens.
It was great, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then the lights that you guys used, you actually borrowed them from me.
Yes.
And they were like three little dinky lights that I bought on Amazon.
Little halogen
lights. $60.
Amazing,
like, that
though.
Whole kit. Like, you can get cheap stuff. You don't have to have the real high-end and get, make something nice.
No, you don't. And especially if you're shooting, like, in somebody else's house and you're going to be using their house power, not having to worry about blowing their circuit
so
is
wonderful.
Really nice. Because it's like, I could plug in as many halogens as I wanted because it would have been fine. But we had three lights for the whole thing, and then I had a little handheld LED.
And it didn't hurt that her house was positioned in a way to where she had the lighting in there was also really nice. Coming in through the windows and stuff was really cool.
A lot of it was fill.
Yep.
And changing, because the bathroom light
softening up and stuff.
Was a really orange, like, tungsten bulb that she actually had in her bathroom, so we didn't use that. We turned that off, and we had the halogen light just in the far corner. You can see it in that picture with Edmund, but it was just like one little stand and bouncing off of the ceiling.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. Like, and it's, so it's using the space that you have, bouncing what you can, and you know, work with what you have.
Yeah.
Work with what you have, you know, bouncing the light off walls.
We didn't
have
C-stands. That would have been nice.
That would have been really
good.
But
we just used like Hannah.
Oh, that's right. No, and
human C-stands.
Yeah, yeah. And Tasha had these, we needed to raise the stand, the light stand, in which you would use Apple boxes if you had them. But Tasha's like, hold on, I have
or a stand that can go higher.
Yeah, something like that. And she she had these like containers, storage containers in her closet. And
yeah, there's one picture of the girl that's knocking on the bathroom door.
There you go.
You can kind of see it in the background.
Yeah.
And then in the background, you'll see some storage bins.
Yes.
Oh, no, not that picture.
It's overhead.
There you go.
Yeah.
So in the top left corner, there's those little bins. On top of that is the light.
Yeah.
With a diffusion umbrella on it.
So clever.
Yeah. And
lighting that hallway was really hard. Because for the first setup that we were in there, we had... it was the argument scene, and it was just hard to position the light in a way that we wouldn't get camera shadow.
Gotcha.
And our shadows and all that, because I hate seeing that. Like, whenever I see camera shadows, like, I've had that on sets before and been like, oh, why didn't we light it from the back? You know?
Yeah, and...
So I didn't want to make that mistake again.
Yeah. I mean, but there's, like, movies that stuff happens all the time. Like, if you watch... I remember watching the first Evil Dead... And there's a scene where there's like smoke coming out of the ground, right? Because the demons are coming. You straight up see somebody's arms like flapping and the smoke.
You're so right.
To the chart.
No, some of my favorite movies, you'll catch like the dolly track or something sliding in a reflection or something. So, I mean, of course, those are feature lengths. And they have so much to worry about.
And that's always the people who, like, they have all the budget that they want.
Yeah.
And they're still making mistakes. So nobody's...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough.
We didn't have anything.
That's what I was going to say. After watching this for a 48-hour film, you know, it was pretty clean.
No equipment. And that was a lot of Tasha, because every time we'd roll, Tasha would be like, do you see that paperwork in the background? And then she'd like get up and go.
She was great.
We didn't have a script suit.
Yeah, again, everyone serves as everything at some point when you're doing it.
Gotcha. And then we also have a shot of our sound guy or their sound guy, which I'm amused with because he looks like a wonderful guy. But this was the only behind the scenes photo that you guys had.
Yeah. The only picture we took on set. I sent out a message asking if anybody had pictures from their phones or whatever. Mm-hmm. And
I mean, we were in a rush and we had to keep moving on. So,
yeah, you're not necessarily thinking about that.
Yeah.
And so like, that's what's interesting is that you guys were in such a crunch that nobody is really stopping to take photos on their phone.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
Cause this whole group of people are focused to achieve a goal.
And we were actually supposed to have a BTS photographer, but she couldn't make it.
Yeah.
Julie Bernard. She's
Cool. Yeah. And I think sometimes, I mean, this was nice, it was loose and stuff, but it's also nice to not necessarily have the cell phones while you're on set, just in case, you know, you want to turn it off and stuff. So it was,
everybody was really focused.
Yeah.
That's why I think it's really nice because you guys were in a scenario that nobody was looking at their phones. Mm-hmm. You
and
know,
I think
we're actually making a movie here.
The hardest part was just getting started because we didn't have an AD. So I was kind of doing the schedule while we're shooting.
We had our shot list.
Actors were getting their makeup and stuff. We had our shot list, but we hadn't like really scheduled it out. So just getting that first shot off, and you know, rallying everybody around. We had a little production meeting. We had, you know, 8 people, so we told everybody like what the story is.
Mm-hmm.
We had all the crafty. We had like water bottles and fruits, and you know,
it's usually a little tough on it. I think though, on any set to start the first shot, and then it's like, you know, you start gaining steam, but.
Yeah,
it was tough. We talked about it afterwards that you feel a little overwhelmed with, okay, how are we going to start it out? But once it starts off,
you just keep going.
Scratching them off and going into it.
So great. So now that we've chatted about your execution on set, now let's talk about the editing process and the post-production process. So like, what were some issues that came up for you guys there?
No issues, really. I mean...
Hasmin really took the reins on editing. We started off the night before, and it was, we were fried. I did like a piece of a scene. Yeah, I did like a piece of a scene, and then she jumped on, and she picked up steam. So after, I was like, hey, I'm going to go get you coffee. I'm going to get you some bagels. Like, come on, and back rub. Yeah. Like, what, you know, but she really started cutting. And then we'd look at it. We'd see, how does this piece work with this piece? Can we cut here and there?
But yeah. As far as, like, the thing that helped the most, so if anybody's going to do their own 48-hour project and go into the editing, the first thing I did when we got back was I, you know, merged and synced all the audio. And I don't have Pluralize, so I just... and. I guess I could have downloaded it, but I didn't want to. It's a new piece of software. I didn't want to, like...
You
want
to throw new elements into that time of the game.
And that's the thing. With 48 Hour, never do something new. It's not the place to do it.
Yes. No.
So I just did it old school, like, you know, merging the sub clips and everything. Mm-hmm. But I organized everything in just the actual, you know, scene folder, scene one, one Bravo take one, one Bravo take two. Like, so everything was really organized so that when we actually went into editing... it was really easy to find those takes. Mm-hmm. So I never had to look for anything. Yeah, it was just already there.
You always want to organize your clips as best as you can. Because in the past, I've done it where I just, you splatter stuff.
And that's what made it pretty quick. And then that night, this was Thursday night.
The night of the shoot, yeah.
Yeah, I edited one scene. And then we got about 6 hours of sleep. And then got up at 9:30.
Yeah, it felt like we overindulged a little. We didn't want to sleep as much as we did, but we were like...
And when was the deadline?
8 p.m. Friday.
Yeah.
Yes.
In between 5 and 8 p.m. Because they gave, like, time location for driving.
Yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
Because we had to drop it off in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. But from 9:30 to 3 p.m., 9:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. was just editing. Mm-hmm. Like, I only, like, got up, like, twice. It was just straight up editing. And then...
we were plugging...
from 3 p.m. after was, like, cleaning up all the sound and putting in the music.
Yeah, we were plugging the music in. I mean, we're talking about...
An hour
to 30 minutes to an hour before we had to leave. We knew when we had to leave, so we were plugging it in and toying around with where it was going to sound best.
And then exporting versions as you go in case something horrible happens.
She was on... we were on the freeway with her laptop exporting on the way to...
The time crunch, the drama.
Yeah. I know.
The drama. And I've always found when I'm editing things and I'm on a deadline, like I always get so surprised at how easily things do come together.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, like, if I have all the time in the world, then I'm like, oh, I should have got this, I should have got that. But when I'm in a time crunch, I'm like, I have everything that I need. Let's make this work.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there's no other option.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it still is fine. It comes out just fine.
Yeah.
And I mean, there could be, like, all kinds of permutations of how you could edit this and how you could cut it. But
yeah, because, like, your edit will be different than my edit. Yeah,
absolutely. It's an art.
Yeah, totally different.
But being on a deadline kind of just, like you said, like, forces you to just use.
You have to make the decision and go with it. And if you might even get into a situation where you start throwing things out the window, which didn't necessarily happen with us. No. I think we knew that the restroom scene was gonna be somewhere where we wanted music and the end. And then a little bit for the intro. But we knew that a lot of it didn't need it because they're watching TV and whatever else is going on. But luckily, we were able to plug that in.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the, like, the biggest rules in editing is kill your darlings.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, like, but nothing is sacred. Like, it's fine. There's no part of it that's, like, the must-have thing.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
If it doesn't serve the story,
absolutely,
out of here.
Exactly. And what was good about this script, too, and, again, for anybody that's going to do a 48-hour or a short film, our script was... 5 pages. Mm-hmm. So the max amount of time for this competition was 7 minutes, and there was no minimum. And we never got into a situation where we were like, oh, we're, like, over the time or anything, because it came out to exactly 6 minutes, and then the credits were 30 seconds.
Right on.
And which is another, kind of goes into another reason why we chose the story, because we did feel that there was a pretty visible arc in terms of the story itself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty clear, and I really liked it. And that's why you guys won first place at this competition. So congratulations
Thank you very much.
I thought it was
very nice of you.
Totally deserving.
Thank you.
Yes. Totally deserving.
Thank you.
So after this, now I would like to give you guys some scenarios. Right?
Okay.
So if we're like... we're on set, like, so much of these kind of filmmaking scenarios are like, I'm on set, we have to figure out a solution to this thing, okay? So, say we're in this 48-hour film festival, and beforehand we've rented all this different gear, so now we've got, like, we know for this one shot, we want to track somebody down the hallway, and so we have a Steadicam for it, but we find out the day of that our camera is too heavy for the rig. What do we do?
All right. Well, we can both answer this. Something we were talking about that I think would work is if you don't have a Steadicam, I myself have a lot of experience in event shooting and documentary work in which I didn't have a Steadicam. And hopefully you have somewhat of a steady hand. But I've learned and I've seen that if you have your subject, your actor, right in on the frame, and it also helps if you have other people in the room, if you're, you know, depending on your script, and you move along with them, their motion and the motion of the other stuff going on sometimes helps you balance out. It balances out any shakiness that you might have.
Are you resting the camera on the person?
No. Just you holding it, you know, walking along their arm or their hair.
Floating with them,
you know, walking. Mm-hmm. And it's just that the motion that's going on sometimes helps with the shakiness. It balances it out in a way I've noticed. And you... Again, this depends on your story, and hopefully it works. And from there, you can just start cutting to anything. If you're on sticks, you know, you can cut to that shot. And maybe you can reduce the amount of time that you were going to be on the Steadicam so that, like in ours, that we had a steady shot or a tracking shot. And that was really the only one in the whole short, I believe. So
no, we had two. We had when they were exiting.
Oh, and then they were exiting. But other than that, we were on sticks. So that helps too, balancing out the type of shot you're having, so that there's not a lot of movement.
And from like my perspective as like a camera operator, I would say increase your aperture so that your depth of field isn't so shallow. Mm-hmm. So that way you're not going to have so many focus issues. Mm-hmm. Try to keep the same distance from your subject so that you're not going to be like, ah. Or get really creative and get like a rolling chair.
Yeah.
And sit in the chair, get your arms, like just lock them. Sometimes I feel really strong on set because I'm like,
I would sit
my arms.
In this rolling chair and I would go like this.
Yeah.
And I would hold the camera.
Yeah, just get.
And I'd say, Edmund, push me.
Yep.
That's exactly what I would do.
Oh, yeah. Like get something that rolls around. We didn't have it. Because we thought about that on set, but we didn't have it. She didn't have any rolling chairs.
No.
It was a 1950s style house.
Who doesn't have
wheels?
Rolling chairs?
shopping cart.
No, yeah, I've talked to so many friends who have used wheelchairs or something for their...
Wheelchairs are real.
Or a skateboard or something, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did a shot once where we put the skateboard on... Or we put the camera on a skateboard and then we just like pushed it down an alleyway.
Yeah.
And it actually was really cool because it was smooth at first and then it hit gravel and it got really
crazy. Oh, I remember you showing me that.
That was for Overland.
Yeah.
And it came out really cool.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah. Right, so then it's like you get happy accidents with shots that you are trying to just kind of...
Yeah, you're like, hey, that
throw
worked.
Together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in the case with the tracking shots for this, the one inside had to be at like a 1-2 aperture because it was really dark inside. And that's one thing is that we didn't have like very powerful lights. So that scene was kind of dark. Mm-hmm. So that was difficult because it was just keeping her in focus as I walked backwards.
Yeah. And don't be so afraid. I mean, they're definitely going to fall out of focus. And of course you want to keep it in focus as much as you can, but don't be super afraid of letting them fall out, a little bit out of focus, because sometimes it gives you something kind of cool.
Right on. Okay. And then one more scenario for you. Obviously, this actor was cool with putting on makeup, but you guys didn't know this until the day of. Mm-hmm. So, say you come up with this exact story, you get to set, and you're like, listen, actor guy, you are going to be a cross-dresser. And he says, no.
Well, we actually called him before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like, okay, but so this is a hypothetical scenario.
Yeah.
Scenario.
So like, what, as a director, are you going to say to him?
I would ask him just why, like, let's talk about maybe why, because we had this discussion a little bit, like, about even why it felt like we had to ask somebody, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
I would say that for whatever reason he's hesitant, that alone should be enough reason for him to do it, because it'll provide a challenge for him either way. You know, what's holding you back? Let's try this, and this could be something challenging.
Yeah, and I think that's fabulous. I think that's the best approach. You know, of course, there could be many approaches to that, but you are coming at this actor of like, well, you're obviously not comfortable with this, but this could be a good place for you to grow.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. It'll provide you something, maybe with something that you've never done before that comes out great, which is the case with Lotus and Avi Bernard. So, absolutely.
And then you're reframing it as something that's exciting to them as opposed to just scary.
Yeah.
Great. Awesome. I love that. Now, before we wrap things up, do you guys have any messages to other filmmakers that aspiring or have just got started or they're in film school or not in film school? What kind of advice do you have to those folks?
I would say keep yourself open to possibilities and say yes to every opportunity that comes by. Don't overthink it and just go for it, you know?
Yeah.
Like even if you just have to find people off of Facebook.
Yeah.
Like,
Cool. So, like, advice for, like, if you are in film school, like, I think we discussed this a little bit before. If you are in film school, a little bit of advice of how to, like, take advantage of your situation.
In terms of you know, being in film school and using the resources.
Yeah, utilize their resources. Yeah, make sure you network outside as well, because, like, don't expect that they're going to give you a job after you get out.
No, of course not. And just shoot, you know. Pick up the camera and shoot. Don't worry about the kind of camera you have. Just tell a story and tell it the way you want to tell it. Also, don't doubt yourself, and don't let anyone's doubt, you know, put you down.
Totally. Yeah. And that's confident. Good advice. In film school, not in film school, and not even in the film industry. Mm-hmm. Don't let other people's doubt get you down.
Exactly, yeah. Stay confident and push through.
Yeah, and definitely if you're in film school right now, take advantages of your summers. Try and get internships. If you can go to a film school in a big city, do it, just because you'll have so many networking opportunities that you might not have in a smaller city. So, you know, I'm from Las Cruces, New Mexico. Yeah, definitely use those... The fact that you're still in school to figure out what you want to do.
Yeah, school is fun, and you know, take as much as you can from it.
Right, so if you are lucky enough to be able to go to film school, that's great. Like, there's a lot of opportunities. You can take a lot from it, and you can utilize those resources. Yeah. If you don't go to film school, it's totally cool. You can still find people through social media that want to just work on things. So there's lots of different routes to becoming a filmmaker, and so much of it is just on the fly.
Yeah. And do 48 hours.
Do a 48-hour film festival. Yeah, they're everywhere. So thank you so much for joining me. Tell us one more time where they can find you guys on social media.
On Instagram, you can find me at Jazmeener, Jazmeener.
On my Instagram is Ed_Lozano_, and I'm also on Facebook.
All right. Thank you, Edmund and Jazmeen. Again, I am your host, Mary Lou Mandel. You can find me on all social media at Mary Lou Mandel. And this is On the Fly Filmmaking, where you will get encouraged to keep creating and go out there and get the shot.
Thanks for having us, Mary Lou.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.